Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. The goal of Central Coast Voices, as you may have heard me mention many times before, is really to bring you credible and valid information and insights about diverse members of our community. And that's why we're here. We want this to be part of a discussion. Also, this is public radio and it is a community radio station, which you can be part of the discussion, not just as a listener, but as part of what we are talking about here. It is a call-in program. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. This is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, which is an arm of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. One of the things that Action does is release a report every 3 years. That report is called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. And that report looks at both life issues, health issues, community issues, both economically and socially in the community. And that report is available for your viewing or download in its entirety or in portions as you may like at actionslo.org. There is no charge for the report. You do not need to register in order to get it. You can pretty much just go to that website, www.actionslo.org, and take a look at it. A lot of what we do every week, and as you know, I share this chair with Chris Kington Barker, and she and I alternate weeks, is look at things that are going on in our community and how they're happening and why they're happening and what they're involved with. Today, we are going to talk with some folks from People of Faith for Justice. People of Faith for Justice is an interfaith alliance in San Luis Obispo County dedicated to promoting peace and justice for all. It started out as an organization of clergy, referred to as clergy and laity, within the religious community of San Luis Obispo County, and they have broadened their name and broadened their topic to not include any more people, I think, than they had intended to include originally, which is everyone who wants to be included, but maybe to get a better understanding of for people of what they're doing and why they're here. With us today are Carolyn Hall, who's the rector of St. Benedict's Episcopal Church in Los Osos, Janice Mehring, who is the rabbi of Oro Safon. Was that reasonably good? Okay, a pronunciation of Hebrew that I am not that familiar with. And that's a Jewish congregation in Atascadero. And Richard Kurish, who's a retired minister of the Christian Church Disciples of Christ. And I welcome you all here today.
Thank you.
And
we'll
get into why you're all here in a little bit. This is an organization that I've been aware of for a while, and because you've become very involved in what I would classify as, in my perspective, in my prejudice, socially aware topics. Oftentimes we find communities of faith that are but can't think of a better way of wording this, are self-absorbed. Sometimes communities of faith, in my opinion, tend to be very preoccupied with their own tribe and their own membership. And for my prejudice, that becomes a little bit too restrictive. So to have an organization in our county that is looking at issues of basically justice and interfaith alliances from a broader community standpoint is something that I think is refreshing to see. There may be members of the community that don't see it that way. But I guess who wants to jump in first and maybe give me some idea of the origin of the organization and what prompted it?
I can start with that because I was there when it started. Okay. Originally, we...
By the way, this is Carolyn, also
yes,
known as
thank you. Caroline or Caro from St. Benedict's in Los Osos. So there was a time when the predominant voice of religion in this community was one of naysaying and of anger. So people were hearing a lot about what God did not want them to be doing. And there was a concern amongst some of the clergy that we were preaching a God of God of love, and that people really weren't hearing about that, and they weren't hearing that God has a concern for the poor, and God has a concern about how we live our lives and the society that we are creating. So one of our colleagues, who is still on the board, got people together, and it was originally a clergy group, got a group of clergy together and said, so how can we start getting the word out there that God's love is for everybody and that God is deeply concerned about social things, and God is not just a God who's against the gays and is against abortion and is against this and against that, but a God who is actually wanting to be there with his or her people, supporting us and supporting us to create a fair and just society for everybody.
That's a good synopsis, Carol. Thank you. As you were saying that, it occurred to me that there's an awful lot of religious organizations that you may think disagree with you, but in their mind, they're doing exactly what you think they weren't doing before. And how does that discussion play out? I suspect maybe not in public environments, that you have people of a more conservative bent, for lack of a better way of putting it, who oftentimes say, we're doing exactly what you think we're not doing, so why do you think we're not doing it?
You know, we don't tend to have that conversation much in public, Fred. In fact, we don't tend to have that conversation a great deal, because the religious community or the faith community in some ways is as polarized as we see our political community, and it can be extremely difficult to have that conversation. For example, in Los Osos, there are those churches which support the full inclusion of gay people, and there are those churches who don't. And each of us believes that we are following what God is calling us to do, and yet we are both faithfully on a very different side of that particular issue. Now, there may well be other issues where we're not on different sides, and so we sometimes can find each other cooperating on something like a hunger walk or something like that, even though we have positions which are quite opposed in other places. But it's a real conundrum why people of faith find themselves in opposing places on particular issues.
Before anybody else jumps in, let me remind you that that this is public radio and this is community radio, and you are welcome to join us in the discussion. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. You don't have to call in, but if you do, we may be able to look at things from a different perspective than what we were looking at before you called in. And I would encourage you, if you're going to call in, to try and do that early in the program. We oftentimes frustratingly end up with calls that we can't fit in at the end of the program. So now is the time to be part of the discussion. Janice, you were starting to jump in there, and I'm sorry to put you on hold for a second.
No worries. What I wanted to bring up is what is wonderful and unique about this group as an interfaith group of clergy and lay people is that, as Caro said, we sometimes are on the same sides of issues and sometimes see issues differently. But the exercise in working together as people of faith is that, yes, we can oftentimes come together on things that we have in common. But the real challenge in an interfaith setting is to do the hard work of then showing respect and honor for how we are different and unique. And I think that comes to our board on topics all the time. And it's a great practice and a good exercise in being with people from different faith traditions, engaging in social justice work, which many of us do in secular settings. But doing it together as people of faith gives us an opportunity to wrestle with how we are alike and yet so different, but listening and hearing and getting to know each other's story.
I don't know that it's a discussion we've had much locally, but it's been a national discussion. It's come up based upon some things that our politicians have said and how they've been reacted to, that there is a segment of the population of the country, not necessarily the religious community, but the population of the country that believes can't think of a way to word it, but they believe that God and guns belong in the same discussion. There seems to be a large cross-section of the population, not mostly in California, but in other parts of the country, where conservative values that you may not see as consistent with your religious values belong as part of church doctrine. And I'm wondering, does that discussion come up very often in among your peers?
Well, it's interesting you bring up guns. You know, I have a new colleague who has a very nice gun collection. Uh-huh. And she recently moved here from Arizona, where she was living out quite a long way from a town. And it was important to have a gun or to have guns. But it is surprising to me to have a clergy colleague who I know has a collection of guns and knows how to use them and intends to continue to keep up her skills in that area.
Well, I'm not suggesting that the ownership of guns or the activity with guns is inconsistent with what anybody believes, but it's been clumped together as part of somehow a discussion on the political right of things that specifically belong together, and that to me kind of quantifies a part of our population that, for lack of a better word, I scratch my head about. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how we address that. That may be a topic we can't effectively address today, but it's, I think it probably comes up from time to time.
It's probably unavoidable in many respects. I was reviewing some material that I had written some years ago on the tension between what is for many of us, you know, the dominant perspective, certainly within Christianity, of a pacifist position, and yet at the same time that we recognize that this is the goal to which we perhaps want to reach for, at the same time that we have violent tendencies within ourselves and within our society. And I think that there's always a tension between the call, between what we are striving to be and to become as human beings, and the reality of where we are at. And part of the task, as I see it, of groups like People of Faith for Justice, is simply to hold out the promise and the possibilities, and say that, you know, that where we're at is not necessarily where we have to be, but we're becoming, we're striving, and one of the things that I think that our board, and I think if the community could somehow be the fly on the wall when we have our PFJ board meetings, they would just really be astounded, because we're very, very different people, and we come from very different perspectives, but we get along marvelously well. And one of the reasons that we get along so well is that we recognize that there's really far more that draws us together than separates us. We have far more in common, not just because we are people of faith, but because we are human beings in a common endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Are there clergy within our community that are publicly speaking against where you stand?
There have been at different times. I mean, it depends on the issue. When we look at something like Proposition 8, there were definitely. I mean, I appeared on a couple of radio shows with a colleague from a congregation who totally disagreed with my perspective. So around particular issues, yes, there are. I don't think there are any right now that we are seeing that happening.
Janice,
well, I wanted to just go back a minute and speak to this idea of gun violence and violence. You know, we have a mission, People of Faith for Justice, that we work around these four pillars, one of which is peace and nonviolence. The others are economic justice, environmental justice, and human and civil rights. So for an example of what we actually do beyond just sit around a boardroom table and get to know each other and share our thoughts, is Just in early March, we co-sponsored a vigil with the Muslim Students Association at Cal Poly. And the title of that was Honoring the Innocent, a Candlelight Vigil Against Violence. And there was a wide range of students, older people, just a cross-section of San Luis Obispo residents of different faith traditions, different ethnic traditions. And there were prayers offered and thoughts offered. And it was a gathering that brought out the best of what we think about faith, people of faith coming together and speaking out against. And when all the speaking was done, there was just this warmth of going and shaking the hands of people you may never have met before or would not have the opportunity to meet. So those are the kinds of things that we're doing out in the community, and I think it's important for your listeners to know about.
Well, I think that's a real key factor. Obviously, a good portion of what you do is I don't and public outreach, but it's outreach on topics, not outreach necessarily for specific people, but mm-hmm. for people to better understand things. And I personally admire the work you're doing. I wonder sometimes, as the three of you in your organization try and what term I would use, you may not use, expand your tribe, make your tribe as large as possible. We seem to have a lot of organizations, not just religious organizations, but philosophical organizations and political organizations that are spending a tremendous amount of time trying to tighten their tribe. And I'm wondering whether or not that type of religious struggle is something that comes up often in what you see going on around you.
Well, certainly, you know, going back to the Proposition 8 thing, as you may know, Fred, I wrote a book about this. I don't know if you're actually queuing me up here, but we're certainly within the Christian community and particularly within the Episcopal Church, which I'm most familiar with, there has been a sense of identity focused around those who oppose gay inclusion. So for those people having... that was kind of a boundary of their identity and a boundary of their group. Mm-hmm. And many different issues can be used like that. And that's often where we get religion and ideology actually becoming a nexus of identity and also of opposition. And I would say that as a group, we really work not to do that.
Okay. Well, we can get back to that in a minute. We have Jeremy on the line. Let me give Jeremy a chance. Jeremy, are you there?
I am.
Okay, go ahead, please.
I suppose I should first say that I truly admire anyone that belongs to an interfaith group. I think it's an important step towards, you know, basic human compassion and us all getting along. But I wonder how members of an interfaith group reconcile their belief that the people they're sharing their group with are sort of destined to spend an eternity in hell.
Okay, who wants to jump in that first? I got big smiles out of everybody in the room, so hold on a second. We'll have an answer for you.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't get to pick who gets to talk first, guys.
well, I'll take a stab at it, Jeremy. It's not necessarily a normative part of Christianity, but there's certainly a strong element within Christian thought, which would hold that the nature that to speak of a God of love is such that God forgets no one and God loses nothing, which means that ultimately whatever the final mechanism, if you will, is. That as God's purposes are fulfilled in time and through the creative process, that all of creation is drawn unto its fulfillment in God's purposes. I don't know if that sounds like a lot of gobbledygook to you or not, but it's basically a universalist perspective. And the universalist perspective says that God loses nothing and forgets no one.
And I might add to that that we actually don't know what God knows. And so it would be presumptuous of us to assume that what we see from our own limited perspectives is what God sees from an eternal position outside of time and space, and that the Christian revelation can be read in different ways, which don't necessarily say that anybody who disagrees with me is going to hell.
Correct. However, say from the Muslim perspective, who, you know, I mean, if you're not with us, you're against us. And I'm the one talking gobbledygook now, and I apologize. But thank you so much for even considering my question.
Okay.
You're welcome. Could I just say, though, that really we have to kind of push back a little bit on that one, because certainly our understanding from our friends who follow Islam is that that is not the predominant way of understanding the scriptures and the way that they live together.
There are a tremendous number of religious philosophies, traditions that get interpreted by a lot of people as black and white, and it seems like everything is far more of a shade of gray than we oftentimes want to acknowledge. I think that becomes a big factor.
And I think, too, it highlights the difference between religion, which is the, you know, the institutionalization and the dogmatization of belief, and the impulse, the spiritual impulse, as some people would say, humankind is incurably religious or spiritual, and within the tendency or the impulse to place one's existence and one's consciousness within a larger context of just simply the phenomenon of being. That takes shape in theologies and ideologies, but the theologies and the ideologies are not the end product. Those are simply tools along the way to understanding greater realities.
Yeah. Well, most of the world's religions do have some underlying premise within them that their path is the ultimately correct path. Well, but populations tend to not always agree with that. Even within the religions.
I'd just like to say, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying before, and the challenging and yet wonderful practice of interfaith work, is that if we as people of faith really believe what our scriptures say, that each and every being is created in the image of God, or in Hebrew, B'Tselem Elohim, it's called, yeah, every person has the spark of divine within them, then we have to confront and wrestle and accept and honor that there's more than one path to know that God. And so that's, if we start from that premise, then I think it helps us to understand each other.
I like how the Quakers say it. There is that which is of God in thee.
Okay. Well, Janice, you become, in my mind, a good personal example for maybe that discussion and that struggle over black and white and shades of gray within Judaism. Mm-hmm. There are disciplines of Judaism where you would not be accepted as a rabbi.
Absolutely. Okay. That's correct.
And so if that discussion comes up within Judaism, I think in the case of a lot of Westerners, until there were major issues in Islam that we started paying attention to, the conflicts between Sunni and Shiite Islam were not aware to most Westerners, even though that is a conflict that is probably as drastic and as noticeable as the Protestant and Catholic conflicts, in some places still today, but of a long time ago. So I guess it's a struggle we have everywhere. Do you address it when you are dealing with colleagues within Judaism? And I'm sure it's come up for you before about, oh, you're a rabbi? Yeah, sure. Not in my discipline of Judaism, you're not. And how does that get answered?
It just, again, gets answered that we are not monolithic people, that we are not a faith tradition that mandates and dictates specifics about faith in that way. We're about practice and about what we do and how we behave here on this earth and in this time. So within Judaism, yes, there are different denominations. There are different strands. There are denominations. I'm a Reform Jew, so one of the more progressive strands of Judaism that is an egalitarian movement that accepts women as rabbis, that accepts gay and lesbian rabbis. So what do I say to those that say, I'm not a rabbi? Okay, I don't really have any control over what they think about me, but knowing within my denomination and my training and my movement that there's a lot of really wonderful work to be done to teach about how we honor everybody and how we are inclusive and accepting of everybody, no matter of gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation.
Well, that becomes a lot of the basis of what, as an organization, the three of you are doing, too.
Correct.
And we can get back to that. I don't want to keep him waiting on the phone too long. I'm sorry he's been on the phone for a while. John, are you there?
Yeah.
Thanks for your patience. What are your thoughts?
Sure. Well, you know, my recreational reading over the last 2 years has been revolving around a study of ancient history. Ran into a couple of good books, and I've just made a point every time I pick it up and read it. It's amazing. All through this history, back to the very beginning, to just stars in the sky, it's people and this divisiveness and just an embattled humanity for, thousands of years. And another interesting thing that seemed real relevant was the leadership throughout that history. There's everything from sheer dolts to incompetence, crazy leadership, and then just astoundingly good men and women, that have created lineage or just a lineage of peace. And my conclusion after these 2 years is I came to the feeling of we're all in this together, because I get bombarded a lot with the thing about the chosen ones, the fundamentalist concepts of, this parochial snobbery, and I just can't see how that's ever going to work, because all the news I hear every day is about people thinking that their thing is better than others, and it's not inclusive of the facts that we are all in this together. And I might bring to mind, there was a fellow named Ahsoka. It was a soldier that fought in the wars, and he saw the wars as being just privation and horrible, and he just hated wars. And he was introduced to some Tibetan Buddhists, and this is like 250 B.C. And he integrated some of these principles into his administration as emperor in India during a period of time in history when there's just battles clear from China to Spain, back and forth, people battling, and he created, in what is now India today, 1,500 years of peace based on a military that was strong enough to protect itself, but more than anything, based on the principles of force is only justified as there being enough applied to stop the conflict, kind of get everybody back to the table and start talking about what the issues are, and you're seeing other people's perspective.
I thank you for your comments.
I just thought I'd enter that into the conversation.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate it. We can talk about it for a while. John brings up some good points, because I think a lot of there's a lot of people in our society. We've talked about, to some extent, the extremes in religion. I think we have a large element in our society that is not necessarily atheist, but is either anti or non-religion or non-religious. And if you have a discussion with some of those folks, some of the discussions I've had with folks like that is that most of or a good portion of the conflicts that we've had in the world within recorded history have been in the name of religion and therefore in the name of God. And that becomes a struggle that they would like us to move away from. Is that a topic that comes up often when you're looking at issues? Because civil disobedience is generally nonviolent when used effective, but sometimes violent conflicts come out of civil disobedience and conflicts. So is that a discussion that you have? I realize it may be a more philosophical topic than a religious topic for a lot of you.
Yeah, I think that one of the points that John was making was about some places where peace has really been possible in quite surprising periods of history. And peace in a civilization or a group is predicated on social justice. It's predicated on equality. And so I think that our work is very much focused on looking at how can we increase social justice within our society. And our work is around education and advocacy primarily. So like this evening, we're going to be showing a film called Inequality for All, which is talking about the amazing situation we're in right now where the 1%, the richest 1% keep getting richer, and the folks at the bottom keep getting poorer, and those people in the middle feel kind of squeezed. And, you know, globally at this point, the richest 1% of the planet own almost 50% of the resources of the planet. And that is not a situation that's going to give for peace. That's the situation that is going to build conflict, and religion is a useful cloak, a useful covering for that underlying conflict, which is far more about social justice. So our mission really is about social justice rather than about dealing with interreligious conflict.
I can't let it go.
Okay.
There is, I can't remember the name of the church and I can't remember the name of the pastor from it, so it'll just be a concept out there, but it's outside of Atlanta. It turns out one of the largest mega churches in Georgia is run under the premise that their goal of Christianity is to teach people how to be more affluent. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why that organization hit the media was that the pastor of that church was trying to raise $65 million for a new Gulfstream jet for the church to carry out its mission. Okay. Now, in my mind, that is obviously a fringe church, because the premise that religion is about acquiring just wealth seems rather strange to me. But the reality is that is one of, if not the largest, quote, mega church in Atlanta, Georgia, or in the area of Atlanta, Georgia. So there seems to be a lot of people who aren't aware of the fact that how well we look after each other is a critical part of the discussion.
I think what you alluded to just a moment ago, Lofres, is even more important, and that is that it's not that the mega churches are doing so well, because you put it in the context of our society or culture as a whole, and they are very much on the fringe. They're very isolated in a way. They may have standing room only on a Sunday, but the reality is, in much of the country, particularly on the two coasts, is that what we're basically dealing with is a huge number of people who are basically indifferent to organized religion of any kind. And I think that one of the challenges that we face in our work with People of Faith for Justice is overcoming the inertia of isolation of people into their own. You used the word tribe several times in the last few minutes. That people are isolated, you know, they draw within their own little circle. They circle the wagons, and they forget that there is a larger reality that may or may not be addressed effectively by religion, but that's part of the reality, the larger reality, as well. And one of the things that I feel that we have the, you know, kind of an underlying need to address as a society, and we certainly work at it through PFJ, is this whole concept of the social contract, that we are in covenant with one another and cannot be, and certainly cannot be much longer, as tribal as we have become in the last couple of decades or so.
Very good point. We'll get back to that. I want to get in on the phones here. We have, okay, Jane, are you with us? And thank you for your patience.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
What are your thoughts and questions?
I wanted to put out a thank you to two of our local churches involved with PFJ for walking the walk. St. Benedict's and Trinity Methodist, both in Los Osos, have been very, very welcoming and accommodating to some visitors we have to this area. There's a group of Buddhist monks from Japan, joined by other walkers. They're walking across the United States to the United Nations to lobby for renewal of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So they're locally here today and last night. So we had a great potluck at St. Benedict's last night on their beautiful porch. And Trinity Methodist is allowing these people to sleep overnight at their church. So we really appreciate that.
Okay. Thanks for your comments. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. We'll get back to it anyway. Let's see. I've got Jan on line two. I'll get back to that. Jan, why don't you just step on in here? Jan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi. Am I on the radio?
Yes.
Okay. Hi. I'm so excited to hear this this program today because this has so much to do with kind of what I personally am struggling with as a mother. I was raised as a Christian, and maybe I didn't ever really listen, but the older I get and the more that I'm learning, you know, I want to expose my children to religion and a higher power. But as I go to church and I sit and I listen and I hear you all saying that, you know, human kindness, love, the spark of divine within us all, that's all what inspires me. And that there is more than one path, but going to my church and I'm sitting there, you know, with my personal beliefs and I hear the doctrine and the you have to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord Savior, I'm struggling with that. And I'm wondering with a rabbi and a Christian, you know, a priest, I'm not sure who exactly is on the program, how would you advise somebody to seek answers while also, you know, exposing their children to something that they might not fully believe? What do you think? I should go outside of my faith? Should I stay within the faith and ask those questions?
Well, John, you know, sense? I think that within Christianity there are lots of different perspectives, and you are participating in a congregation with one different perspective, one particular perspective. So I would suggest that you look around and see what other perspectives there are. There are quite a few Christian churches here in the county. Myself at St. Benedict's in Los Osos being just one of those. And right. Thank you to Jane for her thanks for our hospitality to the Buddhist group. It's a delight to have them here. But there are different perspectives, which are all right. Valid Christian perspectives, just like there are within Judaism. So you need to be participating in a faith community where you don't have to bring your kids home and unteach them everything they just learned in Sunday school. And I would encourage you to pray about where you are called to be with your family at this time, and I'm sure the Holy Spirit will guide you in the right direction.
Thank you so much. I hope just the fact that this show is on today of all days is kind of a sign to me. So thank you.
That's good to hear. Thank you very much. I appreciate that validation of at least what we're doing. And I don't go away yet. I think that
okay.
Does anyone else want to be part of this discussion?
You know, as a parent myself, I just think it gives lots of opportunities to really codify your own values. And then what you want for your children. You know, being Jewish in the North County where my son grew up, there were some challenges. And there were some times we really had to really talk about what we as a family value, not just what our faith tradition values, but how to deal with all of the different kinds of people and perspectives that you meet and are sometimes foisted upon you, and children get that as well. So I just think for you, it helps you to codify your own values for what you want. And then, as Caro said, leads you on a path to find what speaks to those values in a faith community.
Okay. I really appreciate that. I did, at one point, I spoke to a rabbi, and his recommendation was that I start within my home faith exploring. Would you speak to that? I mean, because I kind of went off on an exploration of the Judaism faith because of the Jesus being out of the equation.
So that happens within Judaism as well. Yeah. There are a lot of Jewish Buddhists out there, as well as Jews attending all different kinds of, you know, looking and seeking. And I would agree that the first place to start is within your own value and moral structure. And find the voices and find the teachers that are aligned with what you believe in your faith. And they're out there. We have wonderful ministers and preachers and pastors that are progressive voices in our community. So I would say that's a very good place to start.
And, and Jan, if you want to look at our website, which is peopleoffaithforjustice.org, you will find there some of the congregations that are involved in this organization. There are quite a few Christian churches, and you might want to check some of those out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate
Thanks for the call. Okay. I appreciate your observations on this, because it brings up an important question. Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. We're talking with folks from People of Faith for Justice in San Luis Obispo, an interfaith alliance in San Luis Obispo County. We have time for a few more phone calls if you'd like to join the discussion. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. That is a very, very, very touching call with a very interesting perspective, because I think part of what we seem to get into and it may be a human issue, not just a North American or a Western issue, and that is that people tend to stick with the religion they were raised in or they were trained in. And it's kind of it's unfortunate. If I can't think of a better word for it, but it's the word I have to use. I think to some extent maybe people need to go shopping for the religion that's consistent with what their values are comfortable with. And I don't mean shopping in a negative way, but I mean in a way of exploring what's out there. There's probably a lot of people that you run into on a daily basis that that may be part of denomination X, that have never been to a church except for the ones that are denomination X. And I'm wondering, is there a constructive way, or is there any guidance that you have beyond what we've already talked about for how one effectively shops for a religious tradition that's consistent with what they want to be part of?
I give people who go, and I think the word, the concept of shopping for churches or faith community is just fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems a little bit trivializing.
Well,
that concerns
me. It's okay, because that's what you're doing, is you're out and you're looking and you're surveying and experiencing and so forth. And I give people who do that, I give them so much credit, because it takes so much courage to get up on Sunday morning, say, and walk into a strange environment. And more, the environments into which particularly younger people are coming on if they're looking for some kind of a faith tradition to address certain parts of their lives, more and more there's an increasing disconnect between where the congregation is and where the people are at, because increasingly, particularly as you know, the younger generations are growing up now, they have had no experience with any kind of structured religion. And so to overcome that deficit and say, I'm going to go get up and go out and see what's there, I just give them lots of credit. And I want to reinforce what Carol said, to direct people to our website, because that's not the sum total of congregations that might be of interest to people who are interested in the kind of thing that we're talking about here this afternoon. But that's a really good place to start.
Yeah, and I think it's reasonable to say that for some people, they may be part of a congregation that is too fluid for their for their needs. And so there are certainly traditional congregations that for some people, that level of tradition and finite understanding may be the best path for them. So I guess everybody gets what works best for them. Janice, go ahead.
I just want to respond that whether a congregation is very traditional or not, I think this thread of speaking truth to power and doing justice work runs through us all. You know, if we think of in Deuteronomy where it says, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof, justice, justice you shall pursue. That's what brings many of us to this work. That's what we're supposed to be doing. We listen to the prophetic voice, and it's not just about ritual, and it's not just about practice, and it's not just about worship, but it's about who we are and what we are meant to do, and that's pursuing justice. So I think along this line of shopping for churches is to think about, well, how can I be that within this faith community? What is my faith community doing to that end? And I just would encourage that as part of the exploration.
Okay. My goodness, we've got a lot of callers here. Let me try and get in here, and we'll get as many folks in as we can. Okay. Kate, are you there?
I am.
Okay. What are your thoughts or questions?
My concern is about the Muslims in the Middle East and the religion of Islam. And my question for the panel is, for me personally, when I hear the conflict and the goings on in the Middle East and I hear Islamic State, I think it brings up a negative view of the word Islam. And for me, it brings up a curiosity to look more into the teaching. And I wondered how they view that, if they see more people looking into the Islamic religion because of that, or if they see more people turning away from it because of that.
I think that's a really good point, Kate, and that is a deep concern. And, you know, I think that I'm going to ask Fred if he would put another caller on, because I see that Naira, who is well, she'll tell us who she is. She's head of the Islamic Society, can respond better to that than okay. any of us sitting around the table.
Arnie. Kate, can you listen on the radio? Because it's hard for me to keep two calls on the line at the same time.
Oh, so, very good. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. All righty. Okay. Naira, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you called in, and Caro specifically wanted you to participate in the discussion. Did you hear the questions from Kate?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did. So, yes, thank you for having me on. My name is Nayira Kokela. I'm president of the Islamic Society of Slo County. And I was actually raised in San Luis Obispo, and I've lived here most of my life. And it's been an interesting experience because there are a lot of people who are who do have, you know, stereotypes and misconceptions about Islam. And the media definitely plays a role in the fear-mongering, and I think that shapes people's perceptions about the entire religion. And it's important to realize that, you know, the religion, it's one-fifth of the world's population, and then not all people think the same way and have the same worldviews. And to kind of appreciate the meanings of the faith and the principles of the faith outside of what extremist people can do, who, you know, sometimes will take certain verses out of context and tend to generalize and act out in violence, which is completely contrary to what Islamic principles are in terms of really living in peace and trying to, again, support justice for people of all faiths. And I think it's really important that we try to, you know, put aside our differences. Yes, we have, you know, theological differences amongst the different faiths, but at the same time, there are so many principles that we can work together on establishing, and really I think that divisiveness can be detrimental, because also what you fear you tend to really kind of have an aversion towards. And I think the more people understand what certain beliefs are, really from the people who actually practice it, not from what people from outside the faith believe it to be, I think it can really dissolve barriers and really get us to work together in unity towards really fixing the wrongs in our society. And I think it's important. Nowadays, you see a lot of youth who are actually, you know, leaving faith, whatever it may be, Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, leaving the faith, whether their parents raised them in a way that was very restrictive, or they're just being pulled in through, you know, consumerism, materialism, idolizing other things. And I think this concept of believing in God and really devoting your life to God and really trying to establish mercy and justice for humanity is something that I think we need to all work together towards bringing our youth back towards. And so I think it's really important for people within the local community. There, I know there aren't a lot of Muslims. We do have a Muslim community. We have a mosque in San Luis. We do an annual open house. People aren't really necessarily completely aware of the existence of a Muslim community here. But we do, again, have an annual open house, and so people are more than welcome to come and really meet people of the faith and hear about different, different topics that we bring in people that are, specialized in certain areas, and they can speak to those things. And so it's I would recommend meeting Muslims face-to-face and interacting with them and asking them questions, as opposed to just, generalizing and kind of having that fear of what certain people do halfway across the world, which legitimately can be scary. And we, as Muslims in this community, we are completely horrified and stand against any type of, indiscriminate violence against people of other faiths or people within the faith. And you have Muslims killing Muslims, which is completely not right from within the faith, and killing people unjustly as well. And so, and again, as the other caller, Chade, mentioned, I think this idea of, the Islamic State, it stands completely opposed to what, as Muslims, we believe an Islamic community should be founded on. And against the Islamic history, where we've had Muslims, Jews, and Christians living side by side in peace in Spain, for so long. And so it's happened in the past where we can live side by side in peace, but it's up to people to kind of open their minds to working together and really challenging the stereotypes and the misconceptions and the fear-mongering that can,
We're running a little short of time, yes. So I'm going to have to cut you off a little bit. But you bring some interesting perspective to the discussion, and it's a discussion we will continue. Thanks for your call.
Thank you so much. Okay. Take care,
honey. Okay, Gina, are you there?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
I got to give you about 30 seconds, but I didn't want to make you just go away. Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad Nayeta called in, though. That was really important. I'm also a member of the board of People of Faith for Justice, and I want to speak to Unitarian Universalism, which is an option and an alternative faith in our community. We, as far as shopping for a church, I think it's really an important thing to do. Many people come to our congregation when they have never been to church, but they have children and they want something good for their children and some good principles. And I can't talk about it in 30 seconds, so I'm just going to say that People of Faith for Justice is an awesome organization, and I hope people will pay attention to what we're doing and come to some of our events like the one tonight.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Gina. Okay, take care. Okay, boy, we got a lot of good calls in there. It's probably only covered about half of the information we would have liked to discuss. We've only got a few minutes left. I want to give you all an opportunity, and I'll start with Rich over in the corner, and we'll just kind of work around the room because we've only got about 5 minutes left or so. But obviously, you want people to have an understanding of why as an organization you exist and why you've committed your time to it. So I'd like to just get an idea of maybe your parting shot as to why this is so valuable to be part of.
I remember when I was an undergraduate and started attending a church near the university I was attending. And at the time, and this goes back to the 60s, and there was a preacher there who just captured so powerfully what what we call the prophetic voice in the Hebrew and Christian scriptures was all about. And he lifted up possibilities not just for individuals but for communities and societies. And as I moved into and eventually made a decision to become a minister, that prophetic voice has always stayed with me. And I think that, part of the calling that, each of us has, and I use that word deliberately, calling, because I think we are all called to embody that which is true and good and lovely and loving and beautiful in our lives, and to live creatively with and towards one another. And organizations like People of Faith for Justice have that as their marching orders. That's who we are.
Janice, jump in.
I would agree wholeheartedly, and to say that, yes, we can all be out there doing our work for justice in many venues and many secular organizations, but I think the religious voice has been central in major social justice movements throughout our history, whether it be from the abolitionist movement to civil rights to even international issues. And so this is a way right here on the Central Coast that you can join us and do this work with People of Faith for Justice. You can like us on Facebook at People of Faith for Justice is the name of our page. You can email us, peopleoffaithforjustice@gmail.com. Okay. And we hope you will join us in this work.
Okay. And folks can call into the station or listen to the transcript of the program and get the same information, and we'll try and do what we can to put that on. Caro, you get the last word, Actually, I get the last word, but you get the second to the last word. Go ahead.
Fred, it's the 150th anniversary of the end of the Civil War this year, which is amazing. And yet when we look at our country, we see that we have not come as far as I imagine the people who finally signed all the treaties and so on hoped that we would. It's 50 years after the Voting Rights Act. It's 60 years after Rosa Parks iconically refused to go to the back of the bus, and yet still race is a huge issue. Inequality is a huge issue. Climate change is just coming, and we have to deal with it. The issues of social injustice in our society are still absolutely astonishing, and it's vital that people of goodwill gather together in order to make a difference, in order to create the society we want to have. And so we hope that our work is one small addition to the larger work that we have as a society of working together to create a world that we want to live in.
Very good. I think the name of your organization pretty much sums it up, and I appreciate that, and that is People of Faith for Justice. I was raised in Judaism, and the underlying issue of justice is the basis of everything, and I admire the work you do, and I'm glad you could join us, and we had some delightful calls and some interesting perspectives to share. And this is a discussion that we will continue. It won't end for all of you, and it certainly won't end for us having a part of the program and part of the community we're looking at. And I thank you for joining us today. You've been listening to Central Coast Voices. I'm sorry, the word justice has just come up too much. Central Coast Voices, and this is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is part of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. I want to remind you that Chris Kington Barker will be with you next week. April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and Chris Kington Barker will be speaking with Lisa Frazier, who's the Executive Director of the Center for Family Strengthening. That's the Center for Family Strengthening. They'll be discussing how a child abuse prevention comes about in a lot of cases by ways in which we strengthen families and foster healthy development of children, and it becomes a very key point and part of what we do. Central Coast Voices is sponsored for Action, as I've told you before, and the program has been underwritten and impossible through an underwriting grant from Joan Gellert Sargent, and we thank her for her support. Your input to what we do and what we talk about is important to us. You can contact Action for Healthy Communities and Central Coast Voices at voices@kcbx.org. You can also call us at 543-2323, and we thank KCBX Public Radio for their co-sponsorship and support of this program. And I especially thank my guests today, Caroline Hall, Janice Mehring, and Richard Karish. And we have been part of a discussion we hope you've enjoyed. And this has been Central Coast Voices. Thanks for joining us.